I will hear from wrong, and I'll die in America.
Welcome to our group.
And this ought to show it right here.
Do you or someone you know suffer from depression? If so, please contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our Medical Tuesday broadcast with your host, our Colonel Kimberly Purvis. Hope everyone's having a wonderful night. If you're just tuning in to us, be sure to check out our national Facebook page by typing in the search box, all capital letters, Defenders 7. Now, before you hit that join button, just know that we expect all of our members and future members to participate throughout all we do here in the Defenders 7. Be sure to check out our website, all lowercase letters, www.defender7.com. Be sure to subscribe. On our site, you'll find that we have a store and a donate button. 100% of all proceeds from sales from our store and any donations we bring in go back to our communities throughout all 50 states in a time of need. So by all means, please purchase something from our store or hit that donate button. Plus to help you and your community in a time of need. That's the only way that we're able to do what we do here in the Defender 7. Check out our YouTube channel. Hit that subscribe button over there for us too. We're also on MeWe. Click on Organizations, scroll down, Defender 7, Humanitarian American Patriot Group. Yes, folks, that's right. We are not a militia. We are a Humanitarian American Patriot Group here to serve all states throughout all 50 states. Tonight's show and all the shows we do here on Blog Talk Radio, we always enjoy when you call in with your own thoughts and opinions or just participate, period. And that number to call is area code 914-205-5773. If you're too shy to be on the phone, we also have a chat room right here on Blog Talk that is also live during the duration of our broadcasts. So by all means, either way, stop in and say hi. And without further ado, allow me to introduce and turn the microphone over to your host, our Colonel, Kimberly Purvis. We have Dr. Phil.
Hey,
and our Major Acting, Lorna Munson.
Hey.
Howdy.
Oh, come on, you guys. It's got to be a little chipper than that.
Oh, no. Chipper's done. Satan sat his friggin' sweaty ass crack on Kansas and Oklahoma and Texas, and it's like a friggin' 110 with the heat index. There's no chipper.
Yeah, that's about what we've been having is 110 heat index, and I got to cut wood in it, cut tree limbs.
I mean, it's not so bad. I mean, because I go from my house to my car to the office to my car to the patient's house. You know, it's that in and out, in and out, in and out of the heat. And unfortunately, me and Heat don't mix well. And so it sucks. But a tad bit of good news. I had my MRI done to my brain and my shoulder. So hopefully by Thursday I'll find out if I have a brain. And
they got this personalities.
Yeah, they're going to tell. Yeah, I don't think that's going to tell how many, but they'll tell me whether or not I got a brain. No, the neurologist said I need to have an MRI done before I could go to see them. And because of the headaches I've been having. And I'm going to see how much damage is done to my shoulder. And then I start physical therapy on the 28th, so hopefully, I don't know. With as much pain as I'm in, I don't look up to not having, you know, minimal damage done to my shoulder. So what I wanted to go over tonight was different. There's a few different types of headaches, and the most common ones, like tension headaches, migraine, cluster headaches, and sinus headaches. If we have time to go over all four of them.
There's one more type of headache too. It's called Bobby. It's called Bobby.
Oh yeah, true. Yes, it is called Bobby in Weathers. Bobby Weathers is what it's called.
Hey, in that case, I have a headache too.
But yeah, do you cause them or you just get them from Bobby?
Oh no, she's the headache. Yeah, especially with the full moon and that menstrual cycle you girls have.
Oh, not me. Not I.
Oh, no.
When you get your yanked out, you ain't got to worry about that crap.
Well, if you get it all yanked out, if they leave one over, you still do it.
Oh, no. They yanked it off. It was a radical.
Okay.
I had ovarian cyst, and everything was just, and so I only had one good ovary, and he said, I can leave it in. I'm like, you can take it out. I told him, I said, I ain't coming back to have another surgery. So he just went ahead and took it.
I told them to take mine out, too, and I had a cyst in my ovary, and they wouldn't do it.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
medical menopause.
My cyst was a little bit smaller than a grapefruit, but bigger than an orange. I have pictures. I can show you pictures.
Wow. I'm just glad that all that issue is done for me because I'm over that. No, thank you. So I want to start off with cluster headache just because it's alphabetically. So cluster headaches are rare when compared to other types of headaches. And the pain that they produce is severe. And it happens usually the same way every time. And you can get them into groups or clusters, henceforth the name cluster. And the attack can last between 1 to 3 hours on the average. And you can get them from every day, every other day, to multiple times a day. And, you know, they say that they could go on a remission, and that can last for months to years. And after reading this, I'm questioning whether or not this is what I actually have over migraines. And just because of all the symptoms and stuff. So, but they say more men are affected by cluster headaches than women. And they usually start around 30 years old. So they don't know exactly what causes cluster headaches. And So they seem to be related to sudden release of histamine or serotonin in the body. So these are some things that can possibly trigger a cluster headache. Alcohol use or smoking cigarettes, change in high altitude, bright light, which that is my issue, is light actually hurts my eyes, and that's when I get those really bad headaches. Exercise or moderate exertion, heat, whether it's from the weather or a bath. So believe it or not, if you take a scalding hot shower, which a lot of women do take scalding hot showers, they can trigger cluster headache. Foods that contain nitrates, like bacon, lunch meat, you know, things like that, or using cocaine. And so some of the symptoms, and this is just a common symptom of cluster headache. Sudden onset pain, generally around or behind your eye. Usually it's one eye, but sometimes it can be two. And the pain builds to a peak in about 10 to 15 minutes. So from the time it starts, it'll peak, and then it could stay like that for a few hours. You could become restless or agitated. Your eyes can get red or watery, kind of like allergies. Nasal congestion, sweating on your forehead, eyelid drooping or swelling. And like I said, those are just some of your more common symptoms. And because of some of these symptoms, they actually mimic things like allergies and things like that. So now, the restlessness and agitation, well, that could be something else. But
yeah, cluster headaches, a clinical diagnosis. It's most common in males, and it's usually a unilateral headache surrounding, like, one eye, like right behind the eye, and that kind of differentiates the headache from a standard migraine, because it's not pulsatile like the standard migraine is, and it doesn't have an aura. It's gradual onset and gets worse over, you know, acute period of time. So like it's like, okay, it started, and then 20 minutes later it's a worse headache I've experienced. But you have to rule out, whenever you have eye headache, you have to rule out an ocular migraine. And so there is such a thing as an ocular migraine. So but anyway, sorry about it.
No, it's fine. Cluster headaches are diagnosed based on your history or a pattern of reoccurring bouts of nearly daily headache attacks lasting for days, weeks, or months. And see, that's what's thing about me. Lately, I've been having them almost daily, almost every single day. Usually, it's when I'm outside. That's why I'm going to get to the, you know, how they diagnose them and everything else, but even stress can cause headaches.
I think you have mixed types of headaches, Colonel, and I think your headaches are stress related. But I also think that they're cervicogenic. I bet you've got some bulging discs in your neck that are causing your headache.
I do know that my C5 and 6 is narrowed, and I have bone spurs.
And you might benefit from Botox. You might benefit from Botox.
From what?
A nose block with Botox.
Now, where would they do the injection?
Huh?
Where do they do the injection?
It's a cervical nerve block, right about C5, C6.
Oh. That's one of those things that, like, I just so weary of
Uh-huh.
Oh no! Anything that's concerning your cervical spine, I'm like, I get nervous when anyone does anything except traction. I've had traction,
which
is awesome.
They do an
they do an occipital nerve block with the Botox, and the occipital nerve is very superficial. It's not deep whatsoever. And a lot of times when the occipital block doesn't work for the headache, then it's more cervicogenic, deeper. So then you would have to, they would have to do a nerve block, you know, a little deeper into the to the neck. I do them all the time. But the occipital nerve block is done with Botox, and the Botox toxin lasts for 3 months. Then it wears off, and you have to go back again. You have to do maintenance.
Oh,
it doesn't fix nothing. It doesn't fix anything. Don't get me wrong, but it does mask the pain.
And that's the thing. I just want to know where they're coming from, and I want them to finally say, yeah, you really do have migraines or this headache or that headache, and here, take, you know. Because most of the time, I just have to lay down in a dark room, close my eyes, and in total silence and take a nap for an hour or two, sometimes 3 hours, you know. And there are times when they last for 2 or 3 days, and I'm like, okay, I'm done, and I have to go to the ER and get a shot.
Yep. And
you know,
sometimes with those cervicogenic headaches, laying down makes them worse, because they usually just prop your head up on a pillow, and you pinch the nerve even worse. So, that's why it lasts 2 or 3 days.
That's an awesome thing. It's a possibility.
Well, you got to rule it out, that's for sure.
So, like, on the MRI, they
if your MRI comes back normal, you know, that's the thing. As it's also widely believed some of those headaches are caused by hormonal imbalances, and so, you know. Yeah. Anyway, cluster headache, generally a man, and it's usually periorbital.
So maybe a two-pronged approach is necessary for treatment of cluster headache. Avoiding an attack and preventing future of that. So to stop or at least subdue an attack in progress, you may even be given high dose of oxygen therapy through a face mask for 15 to 20 minutes, which I had no idea about that.
That's using the treatment of oxygen.
Or also a prescribed nasal spray called sumatriptan to relieve severe pain of a cluster headache. Sumatriptan is a selective serotonin receptor agonist, and this medicine causes blood vessels in the brain to constrict, thereby relieving the pain. So the second part of cluster headache treatment is to prevent reoccurring attacks by using daily medications. Verapamil, and that relaxes your blood vessel. Prednisone, that is a steroid, and I know a lot of people, I hate it. you know, and so that reduces inflammation and swelling. And lithium carbonate.
I don't agree with that, but I believe that, you know, first-line treatment is the acute treatment for the headache. The second-line treatment is going to be lifestyle changes and also modifying your diet.
Oh, true.
And then,
I know.
Then you consider long-term maintenance treatment, you know, preventative treatment, if that's the case. That'd be ruled everything else. Sumatriptan is the go-to medication for migraine headache, but not necessarily. I wouldn't use it for a cluster headache, especially since you mentioned about the nitrate. And the reason why they occur more in men is because men produce a lot more nitrate, nitrous oxide, especially you're going to probably get into post-coital headache, having a post-orgasmic headache, especially in men. And that's usually because of the nitric acid release to have the erection in the male penis. I'm sorry, I'm getting far ahead of you. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're fine. True cluster headache, it's not life-threatening. You may feel like it, And it doesn't cause permanent brain damage. They say that now. I'm just saying. But they tend to be chronic, reoccurring, and can interfere with your lifestyle or work. So to prevent a cluster headache, it's important to identify what triggers your headache. Try avoid the smoking and avoid the alcohol. So your doctor may be able to prescribe, you know, medications to help prevent them. So here are some severe, these are more severe reactions or some side effects, whatever, of when to call your doctor. Changes in your alertness, loss of movement or sensation. This is drowsiness, but I'm taking they mean excessive drowsiness, nausea or vomiting, seizure activity, or changes in your vision. So if you don't normally have all of that stuff, yes, I would definitely call you doctor. Cluster headaches occur in groups or clusters, and like I said, this is just some of the key points we've been talking about. They can last from 1 to 3 hours. It can go from every other day, every day, to weeks upon days, you know, at a time. And then they can go away for months and not have one. I've done the same thing with whatever type of headache I have. I've gone months without headaches. And I need even like a tension headache. And then all of a sudden, bam, I'll be hit with them every single day. So, and you know, I do agree. A lot of it probably has to do with stress. But honestly, I don't have – the only stress I really have is some of the irritating RNs that I work with. It's just because of their attitude. So it's not really stress upon me. It's just those whole years and thou attitudes just get on my last nerve. And I need to find a way to just say, you know what, that's their problem, not mine. So – So some of the next steps, once you realize you got something going on, know the reason for your visit and what you want to happen. Always know when they start, how long they last, what makes it better, what makes it worse, what you try, you know, like over-the-counter medications or napping, whatever that you have to do. Changing your lifestyle changes, your diet, exercise, whatever. Bring someone with you to help ask questions and remember what your provider tells you. Now, unfortunately, from my instance, I forget shit. So, and I'm not kidding. I will forget stuff when I walk out of the doctor's office. So I make notes, or I try to make notes of what I brought up to the doctor. If you have to bring a family member or a friend, by all means, do that. So if you forget what to ask, they'll know. And a lot of times, and I noticed this especially with my dad, he would not bring up everything that was going on. He would just leave it out. And so it wouldn't get addressed. So if you're one of those people, bring somebody else that you know will bring it up. Know why a new medicine or treatment is being prescribed. Don't just accept it and say, you know, if the doctor says, here, take this bottle of pills. Ask them what it is and what it's for and possible reactions, this, that, and the other. Because when you go to the pharmacy, they're going to tell you the same thing. But go ahead and ask your doctor.
Ask your doctor if it's okay to use a voice recorder so you can remember. Some will let you, some won't. Also, make sure that you make notes for questions that you may have as weeks or months go on. Before you see your doctor, keep like a little journal, a medical journal, and say, okay, hey, I wonder about this. Write it down, and 3 months later, when you go back to your fasting lab and results, you're not going to remember it. So make a journal. Keep notes of questions that you have as things go along. But if your doctor will let you use your voice recorder on your phone, then that's great. If not, definitely take notes. And every single visit, ask him for a printout of your labs and your progress notes and keep a little binder with those. So you can always go back and review them. Now, he may not have the progress note complete, totally complete, but tell him that, hey, look, I'm going to come back in 2 or 3 days, and I want a copy of that. It's rightfully mine, and you cannot charge me for it. And they'll take some time to do it.
The other thing, also, if you can, have someone check your blood pressure and keep a log of it. And notice if your blood pressure is high and you have a headache, see, that's another indication, you know, you could be in pain, your head, your blood pressure could be elevated, and your doctor may want to know, you will probably want to know that anyway, and you can also just keep a little log of it.
No, it's just background noise. I'll mute my mic.
Okay. Also, know what to expect if your doctor gives you a medication, what to expect if you don't take it. Or if, you know, when you do take it, what you could possibly expect. So, and also, if you have follow-up appointments, please keep your follow-up appointments. You know, you don't want to be missing those, especially when it, with something like that. So, does anybody have any questions on cluster headache? Questions, concerns, comments?
No.
No? Fine. I'm moving on then. All right. The next one is tension headache. I just want to cover the three main headaches that people get, you know. Maybe. I don't know because now my computer just went froze and went full on restart. So a tension headache is the most common type. Stress and muscle tension are often factors in this type of headache. And they typically don't cause nausea, vomiting, or sensitivity to light. So that's why we say when you start getting a headache, and once we go over all three of them, and then you put, well, does light hurt my eyes? Does any loud noise hurt? Do I feel nauseous? Do I vomit? Do I hurt more? I mean, so it's good to keep track of all that so you know what kind of headache you possibly have. They do cause a steady ache rather than a throbbing one. And they usually affect both sides of the head. Tension headaches can be chronic, occurring, or reoccurring often, or even every day. So, of course, doctors, medical science, they don't really know what causes everything. So, that's a given, I guess. So, there are several factors, such as genetics and environment. Muscle contractions in the head and neck are considered a major factor in the development of a tension headache. Some people get tension headaches in response to stressful events or hectic days. So, like, for me, if I have, because I'm a hospice nurse and I go from house to house, if I have, like, every day we have a morning meeting, it's really stupid. It just goes over on call at night. That's pretty much it. Okay, so if I have 4 patients a day, that's usually a relatively easy day for me, right? So all I have to deal with, really, honestly, is traffic. That's the worst part of my job, honest to God, is the traffic and the idiot drivers in Wichita, because these morons can't drive. I'm sorry. And if you live in Wichita and you're listening, I'm sorry, but these drivers suck. And they will give you a headache. So, now when I get more and more patients, like on days I have, like if I have 6, 7, or 8, yeah, there goes the stress. I'm like, oh my God, am I going to get enough, have enough time? You know, and so yes, therefore, that type of stress, yes, I have got headaches from days like that. Usually two Tylenol or a Motrin will make them go away. Usually. So, Lorna, what kind of what kind of things possibly give you a headache? Do you have stress?
Mine is usually from overdoing it because my neck is all screwed up from the car accident. And if I overdo it and I get knots in my shoulders and in my neck, if I don't take something right away as soon as I feel the lumps in my neck, then I'm down for the day.
Yeah, and so a lot of people, if you're saying it, so as soon as you start feeling it, you'll take something, right?
Yeah, oh yeah. As soon as I get just a little bit of a clue that I'm going to end up with a headache, I take something like ASAP because I've gone in the situation where I haven't taken anything right away, and then it usually lasts a couple of days.
Yeah, and see, a lot of people are like, I'll tough it out. No. You know, I know a little pain is good.
That's how I was, because I don't like taking anything. But them headaches, oh, my God. It's like somebody taking a 2x4 and hitting me in the back of the head.
Yeah, and sometimes mine feels like an ice pick is just being rammed in my ear or my eye. That's what it feels like. And I'm like, nope, I'm done. I can't. I mean, body aches and pains, that's one thing. You know, sometimes you can tough those out with no problem.
Yeah.
But with a headache,
yeah,
it's harder to function.
That's where my trigger is aches and pains in my shoulder and neck from, you know, like I said, overdoing whatever I'm doing. And, because as soon as I got to my brother's, I went to the chiropractor because I was having headaches really bad. And my right in the top of my neck, it was all curved to the left, I believe. And now I have a bone spur on it and arthritis.
Yeah, them bone spurs, man, it just feels like, it hurts. You're stuck on a stand spur? Yeah, that's what it feels like, but in your head. On your back. Oh, they're awful. So,
Now that I got a place where I can actually do some workouts, but now I haven't been having that problem. It's all in the stretching. You can get rid of bone spurs on your own, but it requires a lot of workout and time.
Yeah. That I don't have enough of.
Exactly. A lot of people don't. And then it ends up into surgery to remove the bone spur.
So,
and then those cortisone shots are painful.
What's that?
Yeah, they are.
I says those cortisone shots, especially for bone spurs on like the heel, are painful. Calcaneal spurs, those cortisone shots hurt.
Yeah, I won't do cortisone.
But they do shrink. They do shrink the bone. Mm-hmm.
I've had two cortisone injections, one on my right shoulder, and that was 20-something years ago, and then one on my right hip, and that was like 11 years ago.
Those shots in the interarticular joint usually aren't painful because there's not really many nerves in there. But if you bump the bone and you're trying to bump the bone to knock down a bone spur, that's when the shot becomes painful. Usually in a joint space or a bursa, you won't hardly feel it. You'll feel the injection going through the skin, but you won't feel the medication like you do with cortisone on a bone.
Oh yeah, it's not the actual injection itself that hurts. Here's the thing: when I had the two of them, I mean, they were definitely 10, multiple years apart. But also, the one on my hip was the constant running and the ruck marches and lifting, you know, and carrying all the heavy shit, and it lasted 6 to 9 months. That one injection did. And
yep.
Now,
why
I don't
do you want think
to keep
it,
having
frequent
injections.
But why do you think that is?
What?
Why do you think the medication, when you just get a simple steroid shot, that pain is relieved for a significant amount of time? Not forever, but for some time. Most of the time, not always. I mean, sometimes it doesn't work, but that means there's a lot of damage. But can you think of why it helped you for like 6 months?
Probably the inflammation, and I stopped running as much as I was. You know, that was the whole thing.
Running, would it have made a difference? If you stopped running just by itself, would that have made a difference?
I don't know. It was just constantly being irritated. That was the whole thing.
During COVID, you guys probably heard a lot about the inflammatory cascade. Do you remember any of that or remember hearing that somewhere?
Especially
with kids. It was happening a lot with kids. Well, whenever you have an injury, the body wants to right away throw everything in its arsenal at it to fix it. You're parasympathetic and, you know, your flight or fight response. It's throwing every possible thing at it. And we call that the inflammatory response. So if you reduce that inflammatory response by suppressing the immune system with the steroids, the body can start putting what it needs to fix what's there, not just throwing everything at it. So by reducing the inflammation, it actually gives the body a chance to heal itself gradually versus trying to heal it all at once so you can escape that bear that's eating you.
Oh, yeah.
Make sense?
And it's like with my right shoulder and my hip, I can't lay on directly, like, I can't lay on my right side because of the damage that's in my shoulder. And I will wake up in excruciating pain. And all I have to do is just change position. Now, with the shoulder pain, it lasts for hours, and I have to get up and go take some Flexeril, Tylenol, and all that cool shit, and Cialis, you name it, and I throw everything on it, and it usually goes away. And then do some stretching in bed, but I can't lay on my hip for any one period of time. I'm telling you, the military broke my ass. That's all.
Ben Driver broke my ass, literally.
Do what?
I said, men drivers broke my ass, literally.
Well, that's the first time I've ever heard that. That's always been women drivers who are the worst ones, right, Bobby? Three beers.
Been in two car accidents, and both were men drivers.
See, men are reckless. Women don't pay attention because usually they're on a cell phone. Or they're not paying attention. Men speed and drive recklessly. That's what I've noticed. The two types of driving.
Yeah, women, if you study the psychology behind women, all right, women will walk into a room and they'll notice almost everything in there. They're very visual. Where men will walk in the room and they'll only notice one thing in that entire room. Usually it's a woman.
Yeah.
But when women are driving, their visual senses are going nuts because they're noticing every single thing around them. Where the man, when he's driving, it's almost like he's got tunnel vision. And if his focus is distracted, like, okay, what's going on? Oh, look how dirty my truck is. Or, you know, he takes his mind off the road. He cannot focus on more than one or two things at a time, where the woman has like 19 things going on at once.
Yeah.
So that's why the woman actually gets distracted a lot more than the man does. That's my opinion.
No, I mean, it sounds about right.
Yeah.
There's been studies. You ask a woman to walk in a room for, you walk a woman into a room and take her right out through the back door, and you ask her to remember everything in that room. You do the same thing to the man, and you ask to remember. And women come up with a whole lot more details. Like they got that photographic image in their mind, the color of the grapes, even, you know, down to the color of the doilies and the shape. I'm fascinated by that.
We have attention to detail, for the most part.
Yeah, you do. You have attention to the detail, and you have the memory of the detail. See, the guy subconsciously.
Well, see, and here, but see that argument with me is flawed because I have short-term memory loss. So I can probably walk through a room and go, "What? I don't know." And not just because my memory sucks. It really does. If I don't write something down, dude, I'm forgetting it. I am going to.
Well,
I've walked into a room and forget why I went in there.
Well, that's cool because you can walk into a mansion and swear to God it's yours.
Yeah, see, awesome, my house. All right, so
that's
back
right,
to
that's
attention
right.
headache.
Yeah, attention headache, common, very common. It's a band-like headache generally caused by the trapezius muscle. If you look at the diagram of the trapezius muscle, it's a very, very large muscle, and it has several attachments on the occipital and temporal regions of the skull. And when that muscle tightens up, usually this is more towards the end of your normal day, you're going to get a band-like, non-pulsatile headache, which is very indicative of a tension headache. And usually it's treated with caffeine. Caffeine is what fixes that. I don't know why.
But you know what? Something else that I do when I know if it's a tension headache, because I do get those, is I rub my temples in circles.
Get out of here.
Not hard, but it's like massaging the sides of my head.
Have someone massage the muscles between your shoulders and your neck and see if that works.
I have a massage therapist at work.
Well, the treatment treatment for the severer versions of it, it's not caffeine. It's actually a muscle relaxer.
Like Flexeril?
Like Flexeril. That's right. And because of your shoulder and hip problems, I bet your shoulder problem leads to a lot of tension headaches with you. Like I told you,
That's why they did the MRI. Of my brain, my cervical spine, and my shoulder is to find out what's going where. But see, I do know I've got there's something going on with either a pinched nerve or something because I can feel it and it shoots down my neck or down my shoulder, down my arms, my fingers, and I can feel it. And if you
Which
touch
fingers?
Certain parts of my arm, the pain shoots down my arm.
Which fingers?
It's like a trigger finger where it looks like my hand looks like a gun.
I'm sorry, which fingers?
My pinky finger in the bottom three. So make your hand look like you've got a gun.
Okay.
The bottom three.
Okay, so do you get trigger fingers?
Yeah. It gets to where I have to curl my hand.
But does it lock and you have to pop it open?
Yes.
Okay, so
do
you have any problems with your elbow?
Yeah.
I've already had the ulnar nerve release done. That doesn't mean it works.
No, I know. And then,
what's pretty bad? After they
the
do the release,
me, because, you know, we're probably
going
to have to redo the surgery. Huh?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's also associated with a C5 neuropathy. So if you got a bulging disc around C5, it can also cause that ulnar-like neuropathy because you have that brachial plexus that comes through from the neck through the shoulder and all the way down to the hand, and man, it's pretty complicated, the nerve structure there.
It, Yeah, they did that what's it called, where they stick a little, like acupuncture with a nerve conduction.
Yeah, the nerve conduction and the
I do have mild.
Yeah. And, you know, usually it's those two fingers, it's the pinky and the ring that's affected by the ulnar. But the inside of the ring and the other three fingers is the medial nerve, which is a lot of times associated with carpal tunnel.
Do you know what drives me nuts? Is I can rub my fingers together.
Yeah.
All of them, all four of them. When I rub them together, I can't feel. It feels like something else is rubbing my fingers. Like I'm not doing it. And it drives me insane. And I have to take my other hand and rub my fingers in between because it feels like they're not my fingers touching each other.
Yep.
It's like I have somebody else's fingers there. Huh?
Oh, man. Isn't that great? It's kind of strange, right, Bob?
It drives me nuts.
If you touch your index finger to your thumb, touch your index finger to your thumb and leave the other finger straight, it looks like it makes the number 6, right?
Do what?
You guys follow me? Touch your index finger, your pointer finger, to your thumb and leave the other fingers up straight. And as you're looking at it, it looks like it makes the number 6, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's the cervical spine number 6. If those two fingers are affected, it's 6. If the next two fingers are affected, it's 5. And then the pinky and the other finger, it's a 4. So you have probably a bulging disc between 4 and 5. And you have some scar tissue near your elbow for the ulnar neuropathy you're experiencing, even after they did the release. I bet you got some.
But you know what's weird?
When I touch my pinky
to my thumb, I cannot straighten out my other fingers on my right arm. My right hand.
You can't straighten out the index finger, right? Yeah,
I can't.
Well, that's normal.
Well, my left hand, they will be straight.
Anybody try it? Well, Lorna, touch your pinky to your thumb and see if you can straighten out your ring finger.
I can't. I mean,
it's hard, right? So that's kind of normal.
But my left hand
I know, I know something you can't do, Colonel. Oh, you got it, but you got to work at it, right? You got to build that muscle strength. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Colonel,
my left hand, it's not a problem. I could touch pinky to thumb all day, every day, and the three middle fingers are straight up. When I touch my pinky to my thumb on my right hand, it's decrepit. It's horrible. I cannot straighten my fingers. And that's because
and your right hand dominant?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But I bet you can't kiss your elbow.
You know what? I'm not going to try. So listen, any listeners, do not try this because you know you're going to try it.
But no, you can't do it, though. I mean, it's anatomically impossible.
No kidding. Oh, no, I've heard that one before, and I know I've never tried it.
It's true, though.
So when you go to the doctor with headache, they're going to ask you, like, when do you get your headache? What's the location of the headache? What do they feel like? Now, when I ask pain questions to my patients, and I know it gets annoying because people don't always know how to describe stabbing, shooting, throbbing, tingling, aching, dull. I mean, there's different ways to describe a headache or a body ache. And people are like, I don't know, I just hurt. And that's usually where I just put aching. But if you think about it, does it feel like vice grips are squeezing your head? Does it feel like an ice pick? It's like being rammed into your brain I mean, if you can't think of it one way, describe it another way.
You can give examples, right? Right. You know, that's a good thing, because if you ever have any sort of injury or illness or symptoms, you can ask yourself the following question. It's an acronym, and you may know this as NURSE, LOCATES, LOCATES. There are other ones out there, but it's a mnemonic, per se. Every letter stands for something. And, for example, if I have a headache, where's the location of the headache? That's the L in locate. Every letter is going to say something. O is onset, when it is start. C is the character, like you just said, character of the headache. And if they're not sure, is it sharp, stabbing, pulsatile, fan-like, con? Give them examples. LOCA. A is what alleviates the headache, what makes it better, what makes it worse, what aggravates the headache. T is the timing. When did the headache start? Is it more in the morning? Is it more in the afternoon? Is it after an activity? When's the timing of the headache? OCAKTE. Environment. Is it associated in the spring, in the fall? Is it at work? Is it in a cold cooler? What environment triggers that headache? Is it in your house when the air conditioning kicks on and starts blowing dust out of your dirty air filters that you haven't changed in 6 months?
Smell.
Environment. And S is a severity.
Smell.
You need a scale of 1 to 10. Yes, ma'am. Sorry.
Smell. Like, too strong of perfume or chemical smells, can they cause headache?
Yes, absolutely. Go ahead and smell some bleach and see what happens.
Besides aggravating your lungs and burning your nose?
It's aggravating
your olfactory
nerve.
No, but seriously, that's true.
Yep, it aggravates the olfactory nerve, and you have two sets of turbinates in your nose. You have posterior turbinates. And you have the frontal turbinates, or the anterior turbinates. And your frontal turbinates are usually the ones that when a doctor looks up your nose and he sees that they're swollen, but they're the same color as skin. They're not red and inflamed. They call them pale hypertrophic frontal turbinates. That's a sign of chronic rhinitis or chronic allergies. The posterior turbinates are going to be erythemic, and the mucosa is going to be moist, and most of the time you're going to have a post-nasal drip. That can be associated with allergies or infection.
Yeah, they said I have allergic rhinitis. And I did not have that before
you look
I got in the
nose.
Military. Huh?
Yeah. If you look up your nose, and right in the front of your nose, you're going to see on the lateral aspect of the nerves, you're going to see balls that are pale looking. And that is the turbinate, and that's a sign of a chronic allergy. Now, allergens can be caused by many things, even chemicals, if you're exposed to it. A lot of guys come back exposed to the burn pit, and now they have allergens.
Yeah, see, I got mine because of all the chemicals. The floor stripping, the wax, you know, the floor wax, the floor strippers, and all the shit that we were exposed to. And for my eye, the sinus headaches. And when you have sinus headaches, that's the pain because you got the sinus cavities on your forehead, and then you got them under your eye. And I very seldom get those. I very seldom get sinus headaches. But mine will be, you can feel it, and they feel full. And when someone asks, well, they feel full. I could, when you just touch your cheek right under your eye, and I can actually feel that pressure. And the only time
horrible.
I usually get a sinus headache is when I have a sinus infection, upper respiratory infection, bronchitis, and stuff like that. That's usually the only time I get a sinus headache.
Yeah, if you can feel pain and pressure behind your teeth, that's your maxillary sinus. Most people will get a frontal sinus headache. You got the frontal, the ethmoid, you got the paranasal, and you have your maxillary. There's four septic sinuses. The thing with the sinus headache, I mean, the majority of the causes of it, remember I was telling you about the turbinates in your nose?
Yeah.
That's the frontal turbinate, which is kind of pale and swollen, but they can become erythemic and produce mucus. And then you have the mucosa on the septum, and then you have some posterior turbinates, which become erythemic and swollen. When the nose swells up and starts producing mucus, if that mucus cannot forcefully the drip, that there it goes up into the sinus. And then people will come in and say, okay, I've got clear rhinorrhea, which is, you know, okay, I got clear discharge coming out of my nose. I got yellow discharge coming out of my nose. I got green discharge coming out of my nose. I got brown or blood-tinged discharge. I'm coughing it up as it's coming out of my nose. And the color of the mucus is just an indication of how long it's been in the sinus tract.
Yeah.
That's another type of headache. So the sinus headache is very, very, you know, you can have a sinus headache that's going to represent a cluster headache, like it's behind the eye on one side only. If you have a deviated septum and it's pushing the sinus mucus up into that sinus tract and it's causing pain, you could confuse it with the cluster headache. That's why the doctor has to do a physical exam. Eyes, ears, nose, throat.
Mm-hmm. And that's the importance of the MRI of my brain and my face.
Yeah, well, they have to do an MRI of your sinuses too then. So the brain, the neck, and then I would do an MRI of the sinuses as well if you have, you know, chronic rhinitis and frequent sinusitis. So that gets expensive and costly. So if you've got a really good provider, he can actually clinically diagnose those things. But every time I see a headache, and this is what my professors taught me in school, and this is what my supervisors taught me in the field, every headache is a thorough neurological exam. Cranial nerves 2 through 12. You check every cranial nerve and with every headache. And if you cannot find a cranial nerve deficiency, then, you know, most likely it could be a vascular consideration, a hormonal consideration, or a mechanical, musculoskeletal situation. You always want to rule out the worst possible thing that's causing that headache. And a lot of times if you have a cranial nerve issue, you could have a bleeding in the brain, and because the brain is a very small space, you start putting extra blood in there, it now becomes a space-occupying lesion that starts pushing on nerves. And those nerves are going to show the clinician problems.
Yep.
Too much? Am I talking too much? I'm sorry. I'm going to shut up.
No, you're fine. Oh, no, you're fine. Oh, so back to the tension headache. And so, like you were saying, you went through the locate and stuff. And how long they last? Do you have changes in your behavior or personality? Does changes in position or sitting up cause your headache to get better? When I think better, go away or get worse? Do you have trouble sleeping? A history of stress? And have you had a head injury?
That, and that would be part of your review of systems.
You what?
So that you have your chief complaint, then you have your history of present illness, which is the locate. Now you're starting to get into what we call in medicine the review of systems. So you start checking every other system that could have things associated. The psychiatric system, the neurological system, the endocrine system, the, you know, pulmonary system, the cardiac system. Because all of those things can contribute to your headache. So we review the system after, you know, typically if you have a good medical assistant and you look at their chief complaint of the patient, that's what the patient says, then that medical assistant will go ask the history of the present illness, which is that locate you just talked about. then you come in and you ask about the review of the system, and you add to the location work. But before I even walk into the room, if I have a good history of the present illness and the chief complaint, and I see the patient's age and the demographics of it, I already know the diagnosis before I get in the room a lot of times. But, you know, still, there's Libras in every bunch.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing about having good documentation or good whoever's coming in before you to know that. If history suggests
present
headache.
If you ever go to a doctor and tell him you have a headache, and he does not do a neurological exam, he just assumes you're having a migraine or a tension headache, report that motherfucker to the medical board. Oh, sorry, I said that word. Whoopsie.
you know what? This is what irritated me with one of the doctors that I've had at the VA in Tennessee. I was actually 60 pounds lighter. Go figure. I have chronic back problems because, one, I fell off a damn tower. And my L4, 5, and 6, they're compressed. And I have bone spurs on my spine. And I have chronic back pain. And my doctor looked at me and said, you know, if you lose weight, your back will stop hurting.
That's fucked up.
Yeah, well,
if
that's
you lose
okay
weight,
because she was bigger than me.
But if you lose weight, your back won't hurt as much, but it's not going to fix the problem. Because,
no.
You know, gravity is not your friend. And when you are heavier than you, normally your body's built for, because there are people who are big bone and their body is built for that heaviness. But if you're heavier than your body's built for, it places extra mechanical stress on your musculoskeletal system just because of gravity. And when a cold front comes through, it's not the cold air that causes the pain. The cold air causes higher atmospheric pressure. And that higher atmospheric pressure is actually what's causing the pain. So the doctor kind of is right, but she came across the wrong way. You never tell anybody their pain is because of their weight and their pain.
That's the first thing they do is they blame everything on weight. Everything. I got headaches. Well, if you lose the weight, you might hear the headaches. Trust me, I've had my weight blamed on everything. And when I was down to 180 pounds, I'm like, seriously? I just lost 60 pounds, and you tell me to lose weight, and I'm a size 8. And so she has vertigo really bad, right? This doctor is. And, I was very petty. Nurse petty here, okay? And I was playing Bob and Reed with her, and she's like, could you just not move really fast because my vertigo? And she was walking the wall to get in the room. And so we walked to the front office there, you know, to check out. And she went to get me a piece of paper out of the file, and she goes, ooh, my back hurts. I guess, you know, if you lose a good 50 pounds, your back will stop hurting. And,
yes, I know
that was petty. But it showed her weight's not always the problem.
Yeah, but I want you guys to know that evidence-based medicine, most people have been to the doctor that do have, comorbidities of obesity and even morbidly obese or even overweight. They cringe at the thought because they know that the doctor is going to say, you need to exercise and diet. Exercise and diet. You need to lose weight. And so our newer generation of practitioners are trying to get away from using those terms. And, you know, because if you don't use it, the patient will turn around and say, yeah, doc, I know I need to lose some weight. And I'll say, well, how can I help you with that? See the point?
But you know what's bad?
The old school doctors are infamous for lose the weight. You know, you even go to a rheumatologist, and they'll say, your diabetes problem, fucking overweight. Lose the weight and you won't have diabetes anymore. I'm tired of telling
you. But see, here's, and this is the reason why when I get in some of these patients, I've had a severely morbidly obese woman per patient, 600 pounds, not a diabetic. And a 130-pound man who was a diabetic who lost two of his toes and had another job. So that's why I get irritated when they throw that weight out there. I'm like, no. I mean, don't get me wrong. Weight does contribute to a lot of health problems. But
a lot of comorbidities.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong on this. They're saying 20 pounds overweight is morbidly obese.
No, a BMI of 40 or more. A body mass index of 40 or more is morbidly obese, not 40 pounds. A BMI greater than 30 is considered obese. A BMI greater than 25 is considered overweight. So overweight at 20 BMI, 30 is obese, 40 is morbidly obese. So, but it should be based on your body mass index, not the actual weight. The weight to height ratio is what the BMI calculation is based upon. It's not always true. To get a true BMI, you have to take multiple measurements and pull somebody in a pool of grease.
Oh, yeah. But see, here's the thing. People look at me and they're like, there's no freaking way in hell I weigh what I weigh. And someone could be bigger than me, weighs a good 50 pounds less than me. And we could be the same height or whatever, an inch or two. I know, like, how is this possible? Well, one, I know they say muscle weighs more than fat. Yeah, okay. I have dense bones. I have a larger body frame. I carry my weight well, but I'm still overweight.
And you know, the other thing, Colonel, when you look at a person and see the proportionality of the weight, that's a big thing, too, because an unhealthy person is an egg shape. They look like Humpty Dumpty, thin legs and an egg-shaped torso. Now, a person who's overweight that is, you know, it's all the way down, you know, symmetrically overweight, that's a lot healthier than it is for that truncal obesity is what we call that. But if they look like that, if they look like Humpty Dumpty or they, have you ever seen the movie The Minions with your kids, the guy, he's the bad guy, also like the good guy.
Yeah. He's got the pencil legs.
Got the pencil legs and he's got the egg-shaped torso. You'll see people now and you'll look at them and say, those are some lazy, unhealthy, overweight people. And they're not it's just the way they eat, the way they their activities. But if you see a person who is overweight and it looks proportional, I would rather have a proportional overweight person than I would an egg-shaped person. Now, if you see a person who is super morbidly obese and it looks like their tissues are full of, like, oxygen or air that blew them up, like the Goodyear, the Muffin Man, I don't know. Anyway, those type of people, they have a genetic issue where they have a leptin receptor deficiency or they have something inhibiting leptin, and you can get to the bottom of those with special treatments. Problem is, the average insurance doesn't cover those treatments. And so they put a band on their stomach, and next thing you know, they're sick. Then they lose 3,000 pounds in 2 days, and then they got these bat wings that they can fly off the roof, and they have a stomach flap that's getting infected underneath it with all kinds of candida and fungal infections, and then have another surgery. Then they want the lap band reversed, and next thing you know, they're back right back up where they belong because they didn't correct the underlying problem, which was the mentality, the lifestyle, and the genetic problem.
That's like the doctor on my 600-pound life. He will not do any procedure until you get go see a psychiatrist. Because he'll even tell you, you're wasting his time and your time.
That's right.
And
a lot of my weight loss patients, I have them on something for their obsessive compulsive depression in addition to appetite suppressants at times. But first, I try to always start with lifestyle changes, which most people have such a hard time changing their life. It's just so difficult. And you don't know somebody's position at home. For example, I eat a lot of fast food because I don't have time to sit down and cook. I'm always
on
the go.
Honestly, mine is too damn hot to cook.
Okay,
we ordered
there you
out.
Go. And that,
we got Greek
and
food last night. It was just too damn hot to eat.
I get fruits and vegetables laying around, and they'll go bad or spoil before I even get a chance to eat them sometimes. So you never know a person's life. And in order to get them to make those lifestyle changes, they're going to have to want it. They're really going to have to want it. But by that time,
and you know what
helps? They're so depressed and antisocial because they think everybody's looking at them negatively.
And I know, you know, I know you guys, you have your opinion on this, and a lot of men, like, I don't care what a woman looks like. I don't care if she's super thin, average, or a little overweight or whatever. And you know, women are the harshest critics of other women. We judge women worse than men. And so that's where women get this. I mean, yes, there are some guys who are very particular of what they want a woman to look like. Yes, there's nothing you can do about those. But a lot of men listen to other women, and it becomes ingrained into them, oh, yeah, I only want this type of woman. And it really started with women are the harshest critics of other women. And I'm telling you, some women are straight-up bitches. Straight up. They will destroy another woman. You know why? You probably don't know why.
Territorial.
No, for real? Because it's competition.
They're territorial.
Yeah. Why do you think when you look at a woman, when people rate someone like from a 0 to a 10, when you get women that are 8, 9, 10, realistically there's no such thing as a 10. I'm sorry. There's not. And I got that from a guy. He told me, he said, realistically, there's no such thing as a 10. Because it's so unachievable. You get your women that are 8 and 9, they will have their ugly friends, their fat friends, because they're not competition for them. And that's why women do it. In all honesty, that's what I have learned about women. And that's why you'll see younger women have older women friends. But here's the other thing. They got the cougars and the older women attracting younger men. And so now, you know what I'm saying? It's like you have different age group as friends because, the guys my age aren't going to be attracted to older women or vice versa, and that's what it is. And we put such a stigma on what a woman should look like. That's why we have all these girls with anorexia and bulimia, and they're depressed and they kill themselves because they're not perfect.
You have all these girls that get set up with trying to meet the status quo, and all they don't give a shit anymore about their health or themselves, and they just overeat. They don't care about their bodies or nothing like that. And you know, that's vanity. We call that vanity. But the thing is it's primitive. The women are gatherers, where the men were the hunters, the hunter gatherers. And so the women is going to protect the things that they gather. And the men, it's the thrill of the hunt. It's kind of primitive, and you want to use psychology of it. But men would rather have a decent woman who's not going to cheat on him, and doesn't matter what they look like, it beauty's in the eye of the beholder. But on the same token, there's still that socialized status quo of what might be a 10. So even no matter how monotonous that man is, he's still a man. And when he sees a beautiful woman, he's going to admire her for her beauty. That doesn't mean he wants to cheat on his love, or he wants to hurt her feelings because he's looking at that person admiring her beauty. But a lot of women don't get that. They feel threatened by that. And that creates that jealousy thing. And that jealousy just ruins so many relationships. But there's also other assholes who act on it, too. So, you know.
Oh, sure. Empathy goes both ways.
Yep.
And that,
I mean, there's women out there that use men as stepping stones. They're trying to, they get with this guy, get in social circles, and now the next step up to the next social ladder. And they get in their social circles and next step up to the next social ladder. So, and there's guys who do the same thing.
There are women, and I saw this video of this woman, and she was bragging. And you know, she was a really pretty woman, but she was ugly because of her attitude. See, you could be beautiful and ugly on the inside, and you're an ugly person. You could be average looking and have a beautiful soul on the inside and be a beautiful person. But this woman thrives on married men. And she's like, she don't like single men. She wants the married men. And she pissed off a lot of married women.
Oh, yeah, homewrecker. But you know what? There's safety in that because you don't have to keep this guy. You can just use him and lose him. That's why a lot of single guys prefer pregnant women so they can't get them pregnant, and then they leave them. So there's some weird, weird people out there. I mean, the psychology behind that's weird. But the guy and girl thing, it's changing, though. The attitudes are changing because so many dysfunctional families, so many single-parent families, the sexualities, in my opinion, have become confused by the dysfunctional families, where a guy is raised by his mommy and he has feminine mannerisms just because he didn't have that male role model to look up to. And so, then he's assumed to be a homosexual, even though he might be a heterosexual. But then the social media or, television, whatever, the song, say it's okay. It's okay. If you're gay, you're gay. It's okay to be gay. It's okay to be an in-between. So the society's changing, and the socialism
is the toxic masculinity. They've got it now where anyone who's overly masculine, and I don't mean like, bodybuilder masculine. I mean, just in general, any man shoots guns, goes hunting, goes fishing, sports, anything in general, just a masculine man. And they're beating it into these boys, to the young boys, to where, and then now even older, in 20s and 30s, masculinity, it's you can't have that. And so it's like, wow.
My son, I'll give you an example. When my son was younger, he would be very quiet when he would talk, and he would speak very low with a soft voice, and I would pick on him and I would say, sound off like you got a pair, talk like a man, speak up, be heard. Now he speaks very loud, but he still is a very down to earth young man. The problem is these schools. The kids are in these schools. There's gangs. There's gays. There's all kinds of different cultures and beliefs. I mean, there's religious people. There's, all kinds of different things in these schools. But with these gangs, these kids learn to not make eye contact and put their head down when they're walking around. When our older generation says, hey, pick your head up, and be proud of who you are. Act like a man. Well, if these kids start doing that, you start picking your head up, looking in the eyes, next thing you know, you got these gangbangers fucking you up. So it's the socialism that occur in schools, and that's a big problem. But it's not going to change. So you and I, older, we have to become empathetic to it and try to teach our children to recognize those things in their children. And hopefully we can become more empathetic for everyone's beliefs while still trying to maintain a decent...
The attitude about somewhat like strong women are unapproachable. I've had people tell me I'm unapproachable. Why? Well, because you're a strong, strong-willed, independent woman. That doesn't make me unapproachable.
No, but some men find that attractive. Yeah, some men find a strong-willed, independent woman very approachable. And that is where relationships come into play. In my mind, a man and a woman, they're both independent. They have their own ideas and things. But they become best friends while maintaining their independence and belief, that's the perfect marriage that's going to last 30, 40 years. It's when one becomes codependent on the other or tries to rule the other, that's when the problems come in.
And see, that goes back to I don't need a man in my life. I want a man in my life. And see, that, and men need to be the same way. I don't need a woman. I want one. And you can't, like you said, you can't have that codependency. But see, here's the thing. There are men and women who thrive on that, which goes into narcissistic and all that other cool shit. And I've been married to two of those. I've been married to two narcissistic men.
There's men that want a mommy to take care of them. And there's women that want a daddy to take care of them. Right, Lona?
Yeah, call me daddy. Yeah. and there's that thing. But you know, they say that, and I don't know how true it is, when they say, well, call me daddy or call me mommy. Do they have mommy issues? Do they have daddy issues? And that's why they attract that type of person. I don't know if it's true or not. I have no idea. In all honesty, I really don't.
True, true. You know, if they had daddy issues, they're looking for a daddy. I guess there's a lot of psychology behind that. What I'm finding interesting in me being an old school guy, believing, you know, man, woman, God made you that way, and that's the way you're supposed to be. But now practicing medicine, I have to be more open-minded because people have choices, and medicine's a business. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. It's not. You don't have a right to medicine or health care. You have to buy it, whether you have insurance or whether the state is buying it for you from taxpayer money. But you... Insurance, you know, having medical health care is a benefit. It's a privilege. It's not a right. So if I have a person comes in and says, hey, I want you to chop off my boobs and turn me into a man, I'm going to say, I'm going to send you to the right surgeon. And then I'm going to monitor your hormones while you're going through all this, and I'm going to make sure you don't get cancer as you're doing it. But is that my belief? No, it's not. I don't believe it's right, but it's what I do.
I'm going to ask you a question.
I want to continue
in all honesty. This is an honest-to-God question, and I know this starts a lot of arguments. Okay. Because of these school shootings that's going on, or mass shootings, period, in general, and they want to raise the age limit to 21. I know a lot of states is 21 already for you to buy a handgun, and they want to make it 21 to 25 because they say you're not mentally...
For long gun. For long guns, right, yeah. For long guns.
Yeah, but when they say you're not mentally equipped to have a gun, a weapon, right? But yet in the same breath, they're saying 5, 6, 7, 8-year-olds are mentally equipped to say, I'm a transgender. I'm a boy. built in a woman and a girl's body. How is that even possible?
Well, it's not. What it is you have these adults that are teaching these 8 and 9 year olds that these types of thoughts are okay. They're not mentally equipped to even make those decisions. But these adults are putting these ideas in their mind. It's nurture. They're nurturing these young children to believe that these thoughts are okay. It's not saying it's okay for this kid to buy a gun, or it's not saying it's okay for this kid to make a transsexual operation. That's going to be the parent. It's an adult who's going to make these decisions for these kids. It's either the parent or those teachers. The kid itself could care less. Wait till the kid hits
fucking puberty.
Well, that's
like the kid that say, well, I'm a dinosaur. I think I'm a dinosaur. Let the kid be. He thinks he's a dinosaur today. He's a dog tomorrow and a cat next week. All right.
Well,
because it's their mind. They're not mature enough to know anything. Leave them alone. Let them be kids. All right.
But they're trying to educate them. They're trying to educate them to say that these things, these thoughts, and these ideas are okay. That's what they're doing. They're socializing the population. That's how governments control their people, by socializing.
But
that's why you think America's the greatest place on the earth until you've gone somewhere else. You've never been anywhere else. You think America's the greatest place on the earth? It's not.
No, America's a laughing stock of the world right now. Of the absolute ignorance running around. Now, there's a high school, I forgot what state it is, where a parent, it's her high school child now, high school student, thinks that she's a cat. And the parents are demanding a litter box be put in the girl's bathroom so she can use it like a cat. Sorry, that's a mental illness. There's a reason why that child's doing that.
The cats shouldn't
and
have guns.
Cats shouldn't have guns. No, yes, true. But you see what I'm saying?
I do agree. I do agree with the mental background check. If a state decides to let everyone who goes to buy a firearm should have a background check. And if they don't pass the background check, should they not have a firearm? No, but they should be limited to... What the fire? Like, if they're using it to hunt, catch food, and for protection, great. But they have to be. I think they should be mentally evaluated to see if that's what their thoughts are. Now, if they think they need an AK-47 with 25,000 rounds and a machine gun, just because they need to protect themselves, that's super paranoid.
Well, see, that's how it's paranoid, schizophrenic. And I don't believe they should have a gun of any kind.
I agree. I agree that mental illness should be evaluated before someone's allowed to purchase a gun. Now, is that going to stop them from getting it? No, because somebody's going to need money and they're going to fail their gun. But they should be held accountable for that.
Do you think someone who has PTSD should have a gun?
Most people who have PTSD will actually just shoot themselves. They're not going to shoot somebody else. Not generally. Rarely, yes, it happens.
Yeah.
But they should still get that background check to see, okay, if you want to shoot yourself, that's fine. But if you want to shoot somebody else, that's not okay.
But see, here's the thing. Once they see that label, PTSD, you can't have a gun. Why? Why does that person have PTSD? It's a red flag.
Yeah. But should that person the Second Amendment should apply to that person just like it does everybody else. But if a person has mental illness, somebody else should be taking care of that person if they're not capable of taking care of themselves. And so maybe that person should have the gun. But not the one with the mental illness.
And that's why you got to draw the fine line. Where do you draw that fine line? Panic attacks, anxiety, depression.
And you know who would be the best people to ask what kind of gun laws should be put in place? The NRA. I bet you they would come up with a really good plan, the people who are gun advocates. And if they say that everyone should have a gun, even if they're a cat, I think there's something wrong with that organization, because they know that's not true. But
yeah.
I think that they should ask. Congress are trying to pass gun law legislation. I think they should ask the NRA for their input, or a big gun organization. What's your thoughts on this, guys? How can we make this work? And I, even the NRA is saying, yeah, mental illness background checks is probably not a bad idea. What do you think? What do you think, Bobby? You're not speaking up, because I know how you're a gun rights advocate.
Free beer!
Free beer. Oh, so we were talking about headaches. Yeah, we were talking about headaches.
I know,
headaches.
No, we better change it up. I know, we go off on a tangent, so, but that's okay. What do you think, Bobby?
What do you think, Bobby?
About what?
Do you think the NRA should have input into, if we're going to make some restrictions on gun laws, that the NRA should have some input into it?
That the NRA should what?
Have any input?
Should there be,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, no, I was just going to say, well, we already agree that people who are paranoid, schizophrenic, you know, stuff like that should not have guns, period, because they shouldn't.
Oh, yeah. That's that's why I don't understand how the hell they sold a gun to Lorna.
Come on. No, but seriously, people who have panic attacks, why are they having panic attacks? Why do they have PTSD? Why are they depressed? I mean, and like you were saying, usually generally people like that, they're going to shoot themselves. They're not, most of your mass shooters, it's always racism, or they're paranoid schizophrenic, or, I mean, something fully, you know, out there in left field.
Or they're paid for by the left.
I believe if a person has mental illness, then maybe there should be some limitations on that. If a person has mental illness to where they can't take care of themselves, then
you're
the person that's taking care of them has the right for the gun.
Yeah.
But my question for Bobby was, I believe that Congress, if they're going to be making laws affecting, you know, the privileges of purchasing guns or owning guns or having possession of guns, I believe that they should get their input from some of the gun rights activists, such as the NRA. And I'm going to tell you, the NRA is not going to say, give a gun to a crazy man. I guarantee they won't, because they don't believe in that. I believe that they would make some really good recommendations, and that's who they should be asking. I don't think they should just make this shit up on their own.
No.
And, you know, the other thing is, they're going to say, like, well, why does somebody need 100 guns? Why do you need 50,000 rounds of ammo? Look, if you're trying to start a militia, maybe you might want to just, you know, cut back a little bit on what you have. But do you walk down the road with your AR-15 or your 30-06 or whatever? I mean, are you a rational human being who's just a gun advocate or gun, you collect guns? I mean, there is a big difference.
Have you guys seen Mythbusters? You've seen that TV show before?
Yeah.
Well, it kind of sounds silly, but this was a myth that they busted. The myth was, if you were being attacked by zombies, what would be the better weapon? A person wielding an axe, or a person wielding a semi-automatic long gun? And they did it. I mean, the Navy SEAL, you know, the guy's an ex-Navy SEAL, part of the Mythbuster crew, he had the long semi-automatic, and the other guy had an axe. The other guy with the axe killed more zombies than the guy with the long gun. So that they busted the myth that, say, having a gun in a zombie apocalypse would be better than having, like, a knife, a sword, or an axe. So,
yeah, because you will run out of ammo.
I don't know how true that is, But, yeah, well.
No, because you will run out of ammo. That's just it.
Well, you will run out of ammo, but you're also going to run out of energy, too. I mean, how many strikes can you hit with a sword or an axe? You're going to run out
of ammo. So, with that, what kind of zombies are you talking about? World War Z zombies or the Walking Dead zombies?
With that in mind, the reality of it is, are you going to be having to face 1,000 zombies coming at you? Not normal. So what do you need? An automatic or semi-automatic weapon that holds multiple bullets for to protect yourself or to hunt with? Are you expecting an army of zombies to come to your house? Yeah, then maybe you need something like that. But in reality, does it happen? No, not yet. And if there was an invasion, then we have our national army, we have militias, we have things like that. So I'm saying, I agree that there should be limitations. I don't know what the limitations should be. I do agree that mental illness needs to be part of it, but I believe that if they would just consult the experts, such as the NRA,
they
would probably come up with a really good plan, because like you don't want
they
the
should
bad
not
guys.
Use. They should not use people who are afraid of guns to say who can and can't own a gun. They're
exactly.
The worst person to ask.
Yep. I mean, and like they said, if you take guns away from the good guys, you leave them defenseless because the bad guys all have guns.
And that's the whole thing. And somebody made that comment. Well, how come you're against background checks? I'm not. I have a background check every time I buy a gun. Every time. Now, if I knew
I
was a criminal, I would not go try to buy one legally. I'm still going to get one.
I don't know if it's the same way in your state that in Texas. I've pawned my gun and I pawned my shotgun. And when I went to get it out of pawn, I had to go through another background check at the pawn shop just to get it out.
Oh, really?
So
yeah, they don't do that.
If something happened between the time I pawned it and the time I was trying to get it out, if I didn't pass the background check, I would not have got my own weapon back.
No, they
Weird.
Don't do that here.
They don't do it
in Tennessee. I do know that. Mm-hmm. But when you go to pawn it, they don't do a background check. I mean, if you go to a pawn store to buy one, I know here in Kansas, they
uh-huh.
don't do the background check until you pay for it. Once you pay for it, then they do the background check. Because when I got my
They didn't do a background check when I pawned it. You know, they didn't do a background check when I pawned it. But what if I had shot
somebody?
Because
you're giving
it
up.
And then I pawned it. Yeah, but what if I had shot somebody?
Yeah, because you're giving it up.
And I pawned it. But once I go to get it out, that's when they run the serial numbers and they do my background
yeah.
to make sure that gun wasn't in a crime and to make sure that I didn't get a felony between the time, because you're not allowed to have a weapon if you're a felon. At least for some time. I'm not sure for how long that is. I'm not holy. But I'm guessing that's why they do that.
Now, here's the other thing.
No. After a
now,
while,
the,
felons can still... I don't know how that works. It's a loophole somewhere.
Here's the other aspect of who can have a gun. If you have a felony or if you have a I don't care, misdemeanor or felony of domestic assault or anything or violent crime, no, you should not be allowed to have a gun. Because of your, and you could be as sane as shit, but you should
but
not
I mean,
be able to have a gun.
What if my felony was just from smoking pot?
Well, that's what I'm saying. They have to look it up as to what it was for.
Because
you have to put on there, do you have a misdemeanor? What is it for? Well, I have a misdemeanor for a bad check. Does that mean I can't have a gun? No.
But I thought a felon, it was period. I thought, period, no weapons. With a
no,
felon
no, no, no. You
conviction.
Have to put the reason. You have to put the reason for what your felony is. Elder abuse, child abuse,
right?
Domestic abuse, you should not be able to have a gun. Sorry.
Yeah, any kind of aggravated.
You.
Any kind of aggravated felony. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I think you missed it. There's, You know, in some states, domestic violence is a misdemeanor, too. Just depends. You know, assault on a female, like in North Carolina, is a misdemeanor. But that's still, you know, I think you shouldn't, you know, if you're going to hit a woman, you're going to shoot somebody then, you know, maybe.
But that's the thing. If you have the domestic or any type of abuse, you have the propensity to either hurt them more or kill them. That's why you shouldn't be able to have.
You should have that mental health check to see if you have the propensity for violence, either towards yourself or towards other people. Because some people, if they're going to kill themselves, they're going to take people out with them too. So PTSD.
And that's who your mass shooters
are. That's a red flag. Most of the military guys that had PTSD, they're the long gun snipers that usually take people out from a long distance, and they're usually only targeting one person. Most of these mass killings are by kids.
I can guarantee you, most of these mass shootings by kids are victims of being bullied.
They're socialized today, or they're confused. They're confused about their identity of who they are. They don't know if they're a boy, girl, in betweener. They don't know if they're a man, a child. They're just dysfunctional, and they're psychotic. And the evaluations need to occur in school because there's a lot of psychotic kids in our schools, and they're being encouraged by the teachings, like the way they're teaching things. Oh, teachers are not allowed to punish kids. No more corporal punishment. You'll get a warning. There are psychiatric events that occur in schools, and they spend more time with the teachers and counselors in schools than they do with their own parents. And by the time they're 17, 18 years old, most of these kids are 17 to 21 years old, that have done these recent mass shootings that they're making highlight of, they could have caught these. Well, a lot of them had red flags in their background.
It's both the parents' fault and the school's fault. Some of these parents just drop their kids off at school and use it as a babysitting service, and that's it. And so they have no home life, no home training. And so the teacher's stuck with trying to deal with these kids the best they can with 30 kids.
I'm empathetic with the parents and the teachers because I'll tell you, I'm kind of guilty of it too, Colonel, because I work hard. I send my child to school to learn. And when the teacher sends a child back to me with tons of homework and the kid doesn't understand it and expect me to teach the child after the hours, then I'm like, okay, you're throwing too much at the kid. If you can't teach that child what you need to teach him in that 8-hour period or whatever they're in school,
so they're doing too much.
That's the curriculum. I want my kid to go to school to learn, but I don't want that teacher to send it home and expect me to teach him because I go to work and I try to come home and leave work at work. I don't try to bring my work home because at home I got my home life. And he needs to be a kid at home, you know?
Exactly. Homework is something simple, little, a continuation of what you did at school. Okay, all kids have homework.
Should be, right.
But you know what, the one thing that I've noticed between our generation and millennials and Gen Z, is when we got in trouble at school, our parents were like, what the hell did you do? What did you do? They didn't blame the teacher. They blame the child.
I got paddled twice.
I've never been paddled because I wasn't stupid. Because I didn't get my ass beat at home.
I got paddled in school, and when I got home, I got paddled again.
Now the millennials, or actually not all millennials, the earlier millennials are more like zillennials, like Gen X kind of. It's the latter part, and then the Gen Z, it's like, they're blaming the teacher for why their child acts like a total retard, and they're disrupted in the class. Now, if your kid has issues, that's different. Well, not in general. And it's like, you know, the participation trophy. Now, we need to go. And so you've got this and I tell them, you're weak. I'm sorry, maybe that's just me. You can either live the victim mentality or live the, I'm a victim of trauma, then get over it. Don't live that victim mentality. And that's how I got out of the black hole that I was in all honesty. Stop living that, playing that victim card. And it makes you a stronger person.
Your problem with the schools now, too, is every school almost is an independent school district with their own school board and make their own rules and their own policies. And they dictate to teachers what they can do and what they can't do, what they can teach, what they can't teach. And it's not generalized. I mean, it's not the same everywhere for all public schools. So a kid will come to school, and if the teacher says something the kid does not like, the kid has every right to sue that teacher. So the teachers are part of these teacher unions or part of the school board requirements. The teachers do not want to be sued. They do not want to be looked down on because they're trying to teach a child right from wrong. And so these kids get away with a lot of stuff that they should not be getting away with. And a lot of times the parents don't even hear about it, because then the parents, who most of the time are kids themselves in today's society, want to start shit and sue the school too. So it's tough.
It's like when they say we have a zero tolerance for bullying, then mean it. Suspend that bullying.
I agree.
Go
I
to
agree.
The parents.
Yep.
Nip it in the bud. Yep. Don't do detention. Suspend them straight off. No. If you outright bully a child, no. There's no 1, 2, 3 strikes. So first strike, suspension. 1 day, 2 days, whatever. Because that is part of the problem of why we have some of the issues we have. Because these bullying kids will snap.
And they do. They some school districts have alternative schools for problem kids.
The ISS.
Or for, you know. Well, not ISS, that's in-school suspension, but like an alternative school. It's a separate school where all the bullies and all the hard cases and all the, you know, they'll put them in this special school because the government says all kids have to go to school. I think they should do away with that. I think your parents should decide whether you need to go to school or not. You shouldn't be fine truancy if you don't send your kid to school. If your kid is uneducated and stupid, then he ain't going to make it. That's just simple fact. If your kid gets educated,
you're the weakest
most
link.
Billionaires,
yeah.
Most billionaires are dropouts.
Yeah.
Hello, most millionaires are dropouts.
But here's
what do
the
we
thing.
Need school for? Because I'm a conservative.
But here's the thing.
I don't think government should be telling me my kid has to go to school. I can teach him just fine. Or I can be given the choice whether I want to send him to school or not. That's where my kid went
here's
wrong
the thing.
Because of
if
what he's been
weak,
exposed to in the government's public schools. Now, can I afford to send
weak,
him to private
they're
school?
They're not going
to
make it.
Well, no, if I disagree with you there, ma'am. If they have a good, solid family background, they're going to make it. Because they got.
No, I don't mean that. I mean, if they have, when I say someone's weak, I mean emotionally, like I'm triggered because a cow farted at me and I'm going to cry. That's what I'm talking about, that kind of weak-minded, you know, either triggered by everything. Yeah.
But you were talking
that's
masculinity
kind of weakness.
Earlier. But you were talking masculinity earlier. So if a child
No.
And he has those feminine, he has that feminine mentality where his feelings are hurt real easy. If the cow farts on him, he's going to cry about it. Versus you got both parents. Okay, now you can have mom's, attitude. And you can have dad's attitude. You get the best of both worlds. If the cow farts on him, dad says eat it. Mom says cry. So, I mean, at least the kid has a choice now.
But and here's the thing. We need, and this is the biggest problem, which is another issue, is the welfare system, we don't want family units. No. And that's where you come up. That's the biggest problem, especially in the poorer neighborhoods,
especially the black community, because they don't want a family unit.
And they're smarter. I'm going to tell you why.
They can abuse the system.
If you don't get married and you have a kid and your boyfriend works, but the girlfriend doesn't work, but she has the kid, and she's now a single mom, she gets all the benefits, better medicine than the guy working does. So marriage is a government thing that really takes away all your benefits. Working, right? You know, you work, but they want to take all the money you're making to buy health care insurance so you can get the same coverage as somebody not working gets. And so it's actually better to not work and to be single parent, and you're going to rack up and living with your
boyfriend.
But
see, here's the thing. If you're trying to go to school and you're a single parent, you cannot get on welfare. You cannot get welfare.
No, well, it depends on the state now. No, that depends
Tennessee
on the state.
Tennessee told me because I already have a nursing license, but I could not get food stamps. And they said, oh, you're going to get your degree? I'm like, yeah, I just need some help while I'm finishing up school. Oh, we can't help you because you're trying to better yourself. See, that's the mentality.
It's different in Texas. Every state's different. I'm going to tell you why. Because, for example, okay, had a truck driving. I was an electrician. And then because of my disability, I could no longer do my job anymore. And I went to the welfare, and I went to the Workforce Commission in Texas, like it's like the unemployment office. Well, because of my disability, they agreed to train me into something that was more compatible with my disability. So they allowed me to go to truck driving school, and they paid for it. And I went out for shipping. Well, after I couldn't drive truck anymore, I went to the VA and told them the same thing. Look, I can no longer do this job. I can't sit that long. So I got into the vocational rehabilitation program, same thing. But in Texas, even if you're an educated person, but you can no longer work in that job, they will pay a lot of times for you to go and retrain something you're more compatible with. Do you see what I'm saying?
That's different.
So, that's different.
Tennessee is like that too because I was going to go through book rehab because I couldn't do nursing anymore. And the VA was going to pay me to go to vocational rehab. And that's when we went through that first recession and all that crap, and they stopped it all for a while. And I'm like, well, fuck it. And then I went and got my bachelor's degree. And while I was getting it, the actual state of Tennessee is like, no, we can't help you. And I'm like, wow, you will help these deadbeats who want to lay on their ass, have kid after kid after kid, give them $600 a month for having four kids on welfare, give them $600 a month on food stamps, give them enough money, and then let them pay $25 a month rent and let them bitch about it. You'll take care of them who don't want a job, but you won't help me, and I'm trying to educate and better myself. I'm like, do you not see what the problem is?
Well, yeah, and you know what? I take care of the immigrant refugee children that are crossing the border. There's thousands of them coming across right now. They go into these shelters, and they get the same benefits as somebody being on Medicaid. They get medical, dental, vision, and education. They get taught English. They get placed. If they don't have a sponsor in the U.S., they'll find them a sponsor. They get free legal. It's all free. These kids have better benefits than my own kids as American citizens, and because I work, I make enough money where I can buy their insurance. But a kid.
But here's the thing. They've got better benefits.
I almost wish my kid.
Than the homeless.
Sometimes I wish my kid was an illegal immigrant, or what they call them, refugee. They're not illegal immigrants. They're seeking asylum in the U.S. as unaccompanied refugees.
That's debatable.
Well, these kids are better taken care of than my own children. Legal, medical, educational, they're getting everything they need to be successful in the U.S. and not having to pay a penny for it or having to pay it back. They're, I guess the government is hoping one day they get a Social Security number or an ID and they can start charging them taxes. That way the government can make more money. But right now it doesn't seem fair to the average American who busts their ass and tries to raise their family because the more you make, the more they take.
Yep. But here's
what
do
you do?
We don't even help our own homeless population. Our homeless population gets
shit on. Nope, we don't. We do help our abused and battered women, but we have abused and battered men too. But there's no places for them to go. They go to work. They go to work, or they're on the street. And the majority of your homeless people are going to be men. Look around. So every now and then,
we have more men than women, but we still have a lot of homeless women. But still, you know. And granted, I know there's the argument. Well, they're homeless because they want to be. Not always.
Well,
I've got
patients who are homeless, and they'll come in and they have like Medicare. I mean Medicaid. They have the state insurance, or they'll have an indigenous insurance, so they can get some treatment, but they have no home. Or they live from relative to relative, or they live wherever they can. But there's no men's shelters. There's what they call homeless shelters, but it's mostly women or abused women. The men sometimes can get into them, but a lot of times, again, they all have access to the food. There is a place. They have the soup kitchen. But as far as men's shelters and with today's society, how they're bringing up guys who have confusion about them being a guy or a girl, there's going to be a lot more need for the abused male shelters. So if you want to make some money, start investing in that. That's the way to go.
They have men's shelters here. It's called Union Mission. And there's two sides to it. There's just the rehab side where you have classes you go to and you're trying to better yourself, and you're allowed to stay there all day and all night. And then the other side, it's you have to leave from 3 p.m. I mean, from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., you have to leave the facility, and then you could come back at, like, 4 o'clock and be there at night. And they have a soup kitchen there. So they do have that here for men. I had to take care of a few patients.
Well, that's good. Well, I'm glad to hear that because I haven't seen too many around where I live. And, you know, another problem that I see here where I live, there are several inpatient drug addict or addiction clinics or hospitals or what you might call it. They're inpatient drug abuse centers where they actually put you in, go to a little program to try to help you get better and teach you, you know, how to change your life. Not a single one of them here, not a single one of them here is for anyone who can't afford to pay. You got tons of kids that are out here on Medicaid. They don't accept Medicaid.
90 seconds.
They either want prime insurance. They either want prime insurance or they want cash. So these drug abuse facilities, man, we need more for low-income or no-income people. And that may or may not, but it would be full, but the government should subsidize that, I agree.
Oh,
God bless
yeah.
you guys. Love you guys. Thanks for putting up with me. I talk too fucking much, and maybe I'll just give you a break next week and not show up. Lorna's like, thanks, Bill. Fucking, we need a break.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Tim, for another great show.
Yeah, no
Lorna, we're coming for your guns.
Coming for your guns, Lorna. I got a morning wood for you. I mean, morning gun.
Oh, dear God.
Thanks for being here. God bless y'all. God bless America. God bless our first responders, children, our veterans, our military.
Hey.
God bless the Defender 7. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.